Joe Thomas, Reel 5.
Well, of course, with these religious festivals, we had to be very careful. They always kept the military in the background. But there was one religious festival I'll never forget, and that was at Bangalore. And it was the Feast of the Juggernaut. And it so happened, we'd been in Bangalore, I should say, about 3 months. And this, of course, is the largest Hindu festival there is in India. But we were more or less on the alert, but as I say, in the background. And when this festival started, they brought this huge temple out of the city, a huge wooden temple. A priest was sat on top, and I don't know how many hundred natives pulling it. And of course, with their religion, this temple must not stop. Once it started, it must not stop at all. It must keep going. And the trouble was that the religious fanatics came in from outside the city, some crawling on their stomachs, others with their arms held up in the air, and they had them held up that long they couldn't bring them down again. And if they weren't watched, they would throw themselves underneath the wheels of the juggernaut. But of course that was left to the native police. And unless things got out of hand, of course we were never brought into it at all. But it was a thing, of course, that I don't know when this ceremony is enacted, but we happened to be in Bangalore at this time when the Feast of the Juggernaut came on. And it was really a sight, but of course to us it was something we really couldn't understand, all these people being so fanatical about. They get people crawling on the stomachs for miles with their bodies all red raw just to be at the festival. And this kind of thing. Oh, to us, we couldn't understand it, of course. That was the kind of thing that it happened. That was something that I always remembered about Bangalore.
Did you have any servants when you were in India?
Servants, yes. We had cleaning boys, what they called boys. They were. We had one to each platoon. Or two to each platoon. And they looked to do odd jobs for you. And of course you paid them a small wage each week. It was only a few annas to you, but of course it was a lot to them. And they were quite happy. And of course, they had their own quite a large body of natives.
Did people prefer any sort of Indian for a servant? Did they like Hindus or Mohammedans?
No, well, really, these were what, they had no caste. They were outcasts. I forget now what name they gave them. They were really Hindu caste, really, but very low, in their estimation, a very low caste. But they seemed to be very happy. And I should say, when the British troops left India, there'd be thousands of them would be sorry to see them go, because they had some real good jobs. They didn't earn a great lot of money, but of course, neither did their troops. When we were there, we had a shilling a day. That was our pay. And you graduated with 6 minutes a day proficiency pay after you'd been in the army about 2 or 3 years. So at the end of the finish, you finish up with about 10 shillings a week. But of course, that was for a single man. A married man probably finished up with about 2 shillings or 2 and 6 minutes a week. That was in English money. But because you hadn't a great lot of money to throw about. But of course, a nana, I believe we paid 4 annas a week to the Dobie. That was the washer woman for washing and ironing our uniforms, our drill uniforms. And the cleaners, you paid them about, I think it was 4 annas a week. But of course, one cleaner done several men, see, so that it was really a good thing for them, because other than that, they couldn't get a job outside to equal it. But of course, it was a low class job, and there was these people that done it. I said they really had no caste at all, but we got on very well with them, very well. And when we changed stations from Bangalore to go up to Ferozepur, our cleaner, he brought all his family to see us off at the station, and they were all weeping. We got on very well, and they found us a lot different, of course, to what they were used to, the old regular troops. I think the old regular troops used to lead them a bit of a dance, I fancy. But of course, we were a bit of a different proposition to them. So we got on very well.
Was there much else to spend your money on? Was there anything else to spend your money on, apart from the servants?
Well, you spend your money on Well, in the canteen, because there was a canteen, a beer canteen, and the ordinary canteen where you could have tea and biscuits or anything of that kind of thing. But yeah, I say he hadn't a great lot of money to spend anything on, and it used to cost us four annas a week for what we called gunfire. That was a cup of tea and two biscuits first thing of the morning. And it was about around, for those men it was voluntary, whether you paid it or not. It was brought around for those men that had volunteered to pay for this. And, it was brought around first thing of the morning before you went round on parade, and what they called gunfire. Your few shillings used to soon go.
What was the food like?
The food, it was pretty good. The food was pretty good. Because there was no beef much. It was mostly either goat or something of that sort. There seemed to be plenty of butter, and of course, and how they used to do it, I don't know whether it was done through the military. I know they had the grass farms, which the military grass farms, where they used to supply the troops with milk and butter and meat and that kind of thing. But whether it was all done that way, not, I couldn't say. But as far as the food was concerned, we weren't badly off. We were far better off than what they were at home. In fact, we found a way of getting tea home. You could parcel a half pound of tea up, sew it up, and send it through the post and mark it as sample. And we found it could go through the post and send it home. But the trouble was that this tea was unblended. And I found out afterwards I was sending this tea home, but they couldn't drink it. But they were giving it away to people that could. There was plenty of that kind of thing. As far as food was concerned, we were pretty well off.
What were the barracks like?
Oh, the barracks, they were tremendous places. Tremendous stone places. With great open spaces. Oak doors that could be opened out. And especially up in northern India, they were built more or less for defence. And they had flat roofs. They were built with flat roofs with a small parapet around. And I should think that would be, when they were built in the first place, that would be part of the defensive part of them. But they were more or less open would cover a tremendous amount of ground, and I don't know how long they would be, but each building held a company of men. That would be 200 to 250 men. And there'd be about six of these buildings in the barracks. One for each company, one for stores, one for canteen. Tremendous places and very well built. And there was one advantage that they had there, that the electric punkers had been installed. At Ferozepur, when we first went into the Punjab, at Ferozepur, the natives had to work the punkers. And of course, they used to have the trouble that a punker waller used to forget to do his job and go to sleep. And of course, then there was the usual, the boat went to work him up. At Lahore, the barracks there, they were brought more or less up to date with electric punkers, and also had the mosquito nets round the beds. And as far as the barracks were concerned, they were pretty good.
Were you much bothered by insects?
Insects. It all depends. When you were outside, say you were on manoeuvres, you didn't see a fly, not until you come to open a tin of jam or something of that sort. And then immediately there were thousands, and it was a matter of one man waving something while another man got his bread and jam. It was surprising where they came from, especially on the fringe of the Sindh Desert. It was marvellous where the things came from. Of course, then he had the mosquitoes, but we were supplied with mosquito netting where in barracks, but outside. If you were on patrol or anything outside, of course you hadn't your mosquito netting yet. You just go in and bear it. But as far as anything else, I don't think there was a great lot. Not as far as insects were concerned, because you got the usual things in the barracks, odd scorpion and this kind of thing. But of course, when you got outside in the country, you often got that. You had to watch for the scorpions and the young snakes. You had to keep you were always on the alert for that kind of thing. I think we only lost, as far as I know, we only lost two men with snake bite all the time we were in India.
Into the bazaars very often, or were they out of bounds?
Oh no, generally, when things were normal, the bazaars were open. The native cities, say the bazaars were inside in the native cities. And the bazaars were open, unless, of course, there was any trouble or anything. If there was going to be a religious festival of any sort, they would keep the would put them out of bounds to troops. But mostly it was you could go in, but you're always a little bit on the alert. You never went alone. You generally used to go in twos or threes.
What sort of things would you buy?
Well, we didn't buy a great lot. This little bits of novelties that I thought they would like at home, see? Was as you say, it he hadn't the money, he hadn't the money to buy things with, see? But it was only, you really only went into the bazaars really for the novelty more than anything else. But we didn't used to buy a great lot. Oh, the officers, they were pretty good. You see, the officers were more or less like us. They were volunteers. They weren't regular army officers. They were men that had volunteered for service when the war broke out, and applied for a commission, and got it. And on a whole, they were very good. They've gone very well. Of course, the old colonel, he was a bit of a disciplinarian, like, but he had two sons. They both came from South Africa. They both had a commission. But they weren't in my company our officers in my company, they were more or less just ordinary men. And they used to get on very well together. Oh, we went about as far as that was concerned.
What did the men think of Dwyer?
Think of?
General Dwyer, after Amritsar.
Well, after Amritsar, things quietened down. It seemed to us that something had to happen drastic before things did quieten down. And Amritsar, it seemed to be the boiling point. And after that, things were more or less came normal. You could go about the native cities, but of course you didn't go alone. You were generally in pairs or a party of you. But you were never molested or anything of that description. after Amritsar, but previous to Amritsar, well, you had to be very, very careful.
What did we have to do?
In what way?
Well, when you were being careful.
Well, you went to buy something, and because they're bargain. If you were going to buy something, they don't see the price they start bargaining. And of course, some men, they get a bit excited and let off a bit of foul language and this kind of thing. But we had to be very careful not to do that, to keep on the quiet side and not get into any arguments or anything of that description at all.
Where were you when you got the news that the war was over?
Well, when the news of the armistice, when we got the news of the armistice, we were on the road up the Himalayas to Dalhousie. And there was a terrific thunderstorm. And we didn't know, well, it was the armistice until we got to Dalhousie. And they said the armistice had been signed. So we were there at that time, and of course there was a bit of a celebration, but it was a 12-month afterwards. And it was strange that when peace was signed, we were practically in the same position 12 months afterwards, on the same road, going up to Dalhousie 12 months afterwards. And we were there for a few more months after that, I'm afraid. Because we couldn't. There was only the canteen we could celebrate with. There was nothing else. That was as far as we went, as any celebrations were concerned. The peace or the armistice.
Did you expect to be sent home soon after that?
Because we expected. We'd signed on for 3 years, or the duration of the war. And of course we expected, when the war was over, to be sent home. But of course, everybody was the same. Everybody expected to be sent home. And there was no regular troops to take our place. So that we had to stay there until they gathered some troops of different sorts. There was still conscription in force in this country at that time. And of course there were the conscript young men, and they would replace us eventually, but it was November 1919